वंशकपुत्रुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. At the end of chapter 25, Sukadeva Goswami ended the chapter, which was the conclusion, practically speaking, of quite a few chapters, where the from chapter 16 to chapter 25 on the responding to the request of Sukadeva Goswami to hear further about the results of Maharaj Priyavrata's activities. Up to this point, the universal structure has been described. So Sukadeva Goswami has said, now I have explained everything and explained how the planets are situated, what place they're situated, and these planets, these places, are positions which are achieved by living entities according to their karma. Those who are extremely pious, extremely pious, who've acted so much in the mode of goodness, they get placement in the higher sections of the universe. And those who act sinfully get placed in the lower parts of the universe and have to suffer. And when one is in the higher parts of the universe, there's a predominance of pleasure. When one is in the lower parts of the universe, there's a predominance of suffering. So next, Sukadeva Goswami says, now, what shall I speak of? I've explained all these things. What shall I speak of now? So in chapter 26, the king, Maharaj Prickett, asks Sukadeva Goswami, my dear sir, why are the living entities put into different material situations? Kindly explain this to me. It is like after having taken a tour of a prison house and having seen many different varieties, of cells. Some of them are very small and barren, and some prisoners are staying in almost a luxurious room. So what is the cause of one prisoner being placed in one situation and another prisoner in another? So therefore, that basically is the question of Sukadeva Goswami. My dear sir, why are the living entities put into different material situations? Kindly explain this to me. So what causes one to be placed in the higher material situations, the higher planets? What causes one to be placed in the lower planets and suffer? Higher planets again means enjoyment. Lower planets means suffering. So Sukadeva Goswami in text 2 begins his reply. My dear king, in this material world, there are three kinds of activities. Those in the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. Because all people are influenced by the three modes of material nature, the results of their activities are also divided into three. One who acts in the mode of goodness is religious and happy, and one who acts in passion achieves mixed misery and happiness. And one who acts under the influence of ignorance is always unhappy and lives like an animal. Because of the varying degrees to which the living entities are influenced by the different modes of nature, their destinations are also of different varieties. So there is goodness, there is passion, and ignorance. And if one acts good, influenced by that mode, The results are that one achieves religiousness and happiness. One who acts in passion, mixed misery and happiness. Which is very frustrating. Because if someone's miserable all the time, they can become used to it. If someone's happy all the time, they get used to that. But when it switches back and forth, such torture, because the happiness that they are experiencing, they know it's going to end, and they're worried about it. And the misery that they're experiencing is miserable. Why? Because it's misery. And then, under the influence of ignorance again, one is always unhappy, miserable, terrible, angry, full of so much torture, self-torture. So it's not that it's clear this is simply everyone is either in goodness, fully in passion, ignorance. No. One can have different proportions of these things, just like the three primary colors of yellow, red, and blue. So if you take two parts of red and one part of blue, it becomes one color. And if you put three parts of yellow and two parts of red and one part of blue, it becomes another color. So these different mixtures of the three modes of material nature combined become 81, basically 81 different varieties. But there are more subtle varieties too. Goodness, passion, mix, different mixtures, different proportions. So practically speaking, every individual has his own mixtures. It's so individualized. So therefore, every individual, every person has his own body, his own situation, his own mentality. Because of the varieties of the mixture of the modes, in other words, everyone's destinations, where they attain, also have different varieties. Text 3. Just as by executing various pious activities, one achieves different positions in heavenly life, by acting impiously, one achieves different positions in hellish life. Those who are activated by the material mode of ignorance engage in impious activities. And what will be the result of those impious activities? Where will they go? They go to a hellish place, which is dominated by ignorance and suffering and misery. And according to the extent of their ignorance, they are placed in different grades of hellish life. If one acts in the mode of ignorance because of madness, his resulting misery is the least severe. One who acts impiously but knows the distinction between pious and impious activities is placed in a hell of intermediate severity. So different mentalities cause different results. So the first one that was described is if one is crazy and does something in ignorance, then the result is relatively minimal. But if one knows the difference between right and wrong and acts wrongly, then he gets more deeply involved in ignorance, in an intermediate section of ignorance, of severity. And for one who acts impiously and ignorantly because of atheism, he doesn't care. Who can stop me? I'll do whatever I want. No conception of right and wrong, just completely relative. The result of that, the result in hellish life is the worst. Because of ignorance, every living entity has been carried by various desires into thousands of different hellish planets since time immemorial. I shall try to describe them as far as possible. So after explaining this, Prickett Maharaj asks another question. He asks about the location of these hellish places. My dear Lord, are the hellish regions outside the universe? Within the covering of the universe? Are they outside? Are they inside? Or are in different places on this planet? So where do these places of hellish suffering take place? The great sage Sukadeva Goswami answered, all the hellish planets are situated in the intermediate space between the three worlds and the Garbhodak ocean. They lie on the southern side of the universe, beneath Bhumandal, and slightly above the water of the Garbhodak ocean. So we heard of the different lower planetary systems in the Bila Swaga chapter that was two chapters ago. And those describe the seven lower planetary systems. So between the lowest of those, which is Patalaloka, and the edge of the Garbhodak ocean, that is where these hellish planets exist. And also, so slightly above the water of the Garbhodak ocean, Pitriloka, which is not a hellish place at all, is also located in this region between the Garbhodak ocean and the lower planetary systems. All the residents of Pitriloka, headed by Agni Shatta, meditate in great samadhi on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always wish their families well, their own families. They always wish them well. We'll read Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. As previously explained, below our planetary system are seven lower planetary systems, the lowest of which is called Patalaloka. Beneath Patalaloka are other planets known as Narakaloka. Narak means hell, basically. Or the hellish planets, hellish realms. At the bottom of the universe lies the Garbhodak ocean. Therefore, the hellish planets lie between Patalaloka and the Garbhodak ocean. 6. The king of the Pittas is Yamaraj, the very powerful son of the sun god. He resides in Pitriloka with his personal assistants. And while abiding by the rules and regulations set down by the Supreme Lord, he has his agents, the Yamadutas, bring all the sinful men to him immediately upon their death. After bringing them within his jurisdiction, he properly judges them according to their specific activities and sends them to one of the many hellish planets for suitable punishment. So, this topic about Yamaraj, who is the Lord of Death, Yama means death, he's the King of Death, and how he punishes everyone. This is information that will be extremely useful or required in the next canto in the first three chapters, which discuss Ajamil, because Yamaraj will be featured in that, and he'll speak some very important philosophy and give some very important knowledge, as well as his Yamadutas. Yamadutta means the order carrier or messengers of Yamaraj. So they are also will be explained in the first three chapters of the sixth canto. Now these chapters, these first three chapters in the sixth canto are very, very important and very, very sweet and a wonderful story as well and very, very philosophical, very important philosophy that describes Bhagavad Dharma, or the activities meant to please the Lord. So we'll be beginning that at the beginning of February, if Krishna allows. So Yamaraj awards punishment. Here's Prabhupada's purport to the sixth text. Yamaraj is not a fictitious or mythological character. He has his own abode, Pitriloka, of which he is king. Agnostics may not believe in hell, but Sukadev Goswami affirms the existence of the Narak planets, which lie between the Garbhodak ocean and Pataloka. Yamaraj is appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to see that the human beings do not violate his rules and regulations, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Kamano yapi bodhavyam, bodhavyam cha vakarmana, akarmanas cha bodhavyam, gahana kamano giti. The intricacies, Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, 17th verse, the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. One should understand the nature of karma, vikarma, and akarma, and one must act accordingly. actions that should not be done, actions that bring results, and actions that bring no results. So one should understand these things very clearly. Because one needs this to judge how he should act. This is the law of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conditioned souls who have come to this material world for sense gratification are allowed to enjoy their senses under certain regulative principles. If they violate these regulations, they are judged and punished by Yamaraj. He brings them to the hellish planets and properly chastises them to bring them back to Krishna consciousness. So the results of activities that are improper bring suffering, and an intelligent person will understand that I should not perform those activities, and will inquire naturally, why am I suffering? So in that sense, the sufferings, the punishments, are meant for rectification of the consciousness. But, unfortunately, by the influence of Maya, Prabhupada continues, however, the conditioned souls remain infatuated with the mode of ignorance. Thus, in spite of repeated punishment by Yamaraj, they do not come to their senses, but continue to live within the material condition, committing sinful activities again and again. Text 7. Some authorities, now he's going to describe something about the hellish planets. Some authorities say that there is a total of 21 hellish planets, and some say 28. My dear King, I shall outline all of them according to their names, forms, and symptoms. The names of the different hells are as follows. Tamisra, Andatamisra, Rodava, Maharodava, Kumbhipaka, Kalasutra, Asipatravan, Sukaramuka, Andakupa, Krimibhojan, Sandamdamsa, Taptasurmi, Vajra Kantaka Salmali, Vaitarani, Puyoda, Pranaroda, Vishasan, Lalabaksha, Sarameyadhana, Avichi, Ayapana, Charakardam, Rakshogana Bojana, Sulaprota, Dandasuka, Avataniroda, Paryavartana, and Suchimukha. All these planets are meant for punishing the living entities. So this, there are 28 that he has described here, and this is, he's described this in text 7. And the next, from text 8 to text 36, he devotes one verse for each of those hells to describe what someone does and the resultant suffering that one achieves in those planets. And then the from verse 37 to 40 there is some more information, but not about there's a little summary, and then the topic goes on, the topic's changed. So what we'll do is we won't read about all the different hells, but we'll read some of them just to get an idea of what type of suffering awaits one, and it's truly suffering. The first one is one who appropriates another's legitimate wife, children, or money. One who takes as his own something that doesn't belong to him. He is arrested at the time of death by the fierce Yamadutas. Those are the servants of Yamaraj, the punisher, the judge, so to speak. And the Yamadutas bind him with the rope of time and forcibly throw him into the hellish planet known as Tamisra. On this very dark planet, the sinful man is chastised by the Yamadutas, who beat and rebuke him. He is starved, and he is given no water to drink. Thus the wrathful assistance of Yamaraj cause him severe suffering, and sometimes he faints from their chastisement. Does anyone think it's a good idea to appropriate the legitimate wife, children, or money of another? Is it worth it? You gain something. You gain something somehow or another from taking something. But how much suffering does one have to go through as a result of that? This is the law of karma. Text 9. The destination of a person who slyly cheats another man and enjoys his wife and children is the hell known as Andhata Misra. There his condition is exactly like that of a tree being chopped at its roots. Even before reaching Andhata Misra, the sinful living being is subject to various extreme miseries. These afflictions are so severe that he loses his intelligence and sight. He can't even see his suffering so much. He can't even think. It is for this reason that the learned sages call this hell Andhata Misra. 10. A person who accepts his body as his self and works very hard at night for money to maintain his own body and the body of his wife and children. This is what a person does. So, is there anyone in this world like that? It's everyone practically. What happens? While working to maintain himself and his family, he may commit violence against other living entities because he justifies everything that he does as, I have to do this for my family. I have to do this to maintain. This is my duty. I have to do it. I can do anything to maintain my family. So in doing so, he commits violence against other living entities. Such a person is forced to give up his body and his family at the time of death. So even though he's so attached to the body and so attached to the family and does so many horrible things, he has to give them up anyway. And then at death, he suffers the reactions for his envy of other creatures by being thrown into the hell called Rourava. Prabhupada's purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Yasyapma buddhi kunape tridatuke svadhi kalatra disubhomi izadhi yatirta buddhi shalale nigharhi chit janeshu abhigeshu saeva gokara. One who accepts this bodily bag of three elements, bile, mucus, and air, as his self, and who has affinity for an intimate relationship with his wife and children, who considers his land worshipable, who takes his bath in the waters of the holy place of pilgrimage, but never takes advantage of those persons who are in actual knowledge, he is no better than an ass or a cow. It's from the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 84th chapter. There are two classes of men absorbed in the material concept of life. Out of ignorance, a man in the first class thinks his body to be his self, and therefore he is certainly like an animal. Saeva gokara means like a cow or a donkey. The person in the second class, however, not only thinks his material body to be his self, but also commits all kinds of sinful activities to maintain his body. So many people cheat, lie, steal. Why? Just to make enough money to live. He cheats everyone to acquire money for his family and self, and he becomes envious of others without reason. Such a person is thrown into the hell known as Rourava. If one simply considers his body to be his self, as do the animals, he is not very sinful. However, if one needlessly commits sins to maintain his body, he is put into that hell. This is the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Although animals are certainly in the bodily concept of life, they do not commit any sin to maintain their bodies, mates, or offspring. Therefore, animals do not go to hell. However, when a human being acts enviously and cheats others to maintain his body, he is put into a hellish condition. Text 11. In this life, an envious person commits violent acts against many living entities. Why does an envious person do that? Commit violent acts. Yeah. Why? Why does he cause violence and trouble to others?
He usually is very angry.
angry, envious.
Trying to prove that he's still free.
Not considering anyone else.
They get pleasure. The nature of envy is when you see someone suffering, it brings you pleasure. So what a mentality that is. So to maintain one's family, or if one who commits violent acts against many living entities, an envious person, therefore after his death, just like some people, one time when I was in Hong Kong, I saw a man who had, he had a rat in a cage. He had caught a rat. And he had a burner, a fire burning, a kerosene burner, and he was taking the rat in the cage, and the rat was alive. And he was sitting over that, and he was putting him over the flames. Now why would he do that? And he was getting pleasure from it. And he was torturing this creature who was acting like a rat. But he couldn't help acting like a rat because he was a rat. And then I remember very specifically, and I walked past that and I felt terrible. But I really felt bad because I wanted to like go over there and punch him or something and stop him. But I didn't have the courage to do it. People are like this. The people who, we read about this in the newspapers, they kill old men, children, there's some fight going on between one community and another community, and they're killing each other, torturing each other. So envious, angry. After his death, these envious people, when he is taken to hell by Yamaraj, those living entities who are hurt by him appear as animals called Rurus to inflict very severe pain upon him. Learned scholars call this hell Rorava. Not generally seen in this world, the Ruru is more envious than a snake. So he gets to experience what it feels like. Punishment in the hell called Maharorava is compulsory for a person who maintains his own body by hurting others. There are so many people like that. People will see someone on the street and then beat them and take their money. Even they'll do this to the elderly. What hellish existence awaits these horrible acts? In this hell, rural animals known as Kravyada torment him and eat his flesh while he's still alive. For the maintenance of their bodies and the satisfaction of their tongues, cruel persons cook poor animals and birds alive. You see this in Hong Kong. They take like the those crabs. I don't know, you may be able to see it in Perth also, I don't know. But take these crabs and they wrap them up in some kind of a straw type of thing, and then they put them in boiling water. They're live animals. You ever seen that? Very common, yeah? Horrible. What kind of, imagine the mentality you have to do it. How dead you have to be, practically. How callous, how cruel. Slaughterhouses. Such persons, they cook poor animals and birds alive. Such persons are condemned even by man-eaters. In their next lives, they are carried by the Yamadutas to the hell known as Kumbhapaka, where they are cooked in boiling oil. And every once in a while, you hear how somebody gets captured by cannibals, and that's what happens. They put them in a big pot. Knock them over the head, put them in a pot, cook them up. First they invite him for lunch. They don't tell him that he's lunch. How horrible, what kind of... Worse than animals. No, some animals are like cats. They like to play with their... When they catch a mouse, They play with him. They knock him around a little bit. Let him run. He's terrified. He's running. He captures him again. You ever see cat do that? And then finally, they get finished, tired of torturing him, and then they kill him. Such envious mentality. The killer of a brahmana is put into the hell known as Kalasutra, which has a circumference of 80,000 miles and which is made entirely of copper. Heated from below by fire and from above by scorching sun, the copper surface of the planet is extremely hot. Thus the murderer of a Brahmin suffers from being burnt both internally and externally. Internally he is burning with hunger and thirst, and externally he is burning from the scorching heat of the sun and fire beneath the copper surface. Therefore he sometimes lies down, sometimes sits, sometimes stands up, and sometimes runs here and there. He must suffer in this way for as many thousands of years as there are hairs on the body of an animal. XV. If a person deviates from the path of the Vedas in the absence of an emergency, the servants of Yamaraj put him into the hell known as Asi Patravan, where they beat him with whips. When he runs hither and thither, fleeing from the extreme pain, on all sides he runs into palm trees with leaves like sharpened swords, thus injured all over his body and fainting at every step. He cries out, "Oh, what shall I do now? How shall I be saved?" He's terrified. This is how one suffers who deviates from the accepted religious principles. Purport. There is actually only one religious principle. Namantu Shakshad Bhagavat Pranitam. The only religious principle is to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, especially in this age of Kali, everyone is an atheist. People do not even believe in God, what to speak of following his words. The word Nija Veda Pata can also mean one's own set of religious principles. Formerly, there was only one Veda Pata, or set of religious principles. Now there are many. It doesn't matter which set of religious principles one follows. The only injunction is that he must follow them strictly. That is the non-sectarian nature of Krishna consciousness. An atheist or Gnostic is one who does not believe in the Vedas. However, even if one takes up a different system of religion according to this verse, he must follow the religious principles he has accepted. Whether one is a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian, he should follow his own religious principles. However, if one concocts his own religious path within his mind, or if one follows no religious principles at all, he is punished in the hell known as Asipatravan. In other words, a human being must follow some religious principles. If he does not follow any religious principles, he is no better than an animal. As Kali Yuga advances, people are becoming godless and taking up so-called secularism. They do not know the punishment awaiting them in Asipatravan, as described in this verse. Here's an interesting one. In his next life, a sinful king or governmental representative who punishes an innocent person or who inflicts corporal punishment upon a Brahmin is taken by the Yamadutas to the hell named Sukaramukha, where the most powerful assistants of Yamaraj crush him exactly as one crushes sugar cane to squeeze out the juice. The sinful living entity cries very pitiably and faints, just as an innocent man undergoes punishments. This is the result of punishing a faultless person. So a great responsibility rests upon the head of those who have the power of punishment. Because what punishments one causes others, one has to suffer. The position of power is a great responsibility. And it should not be abused. By the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, low-grade living beings like bugs and mosquitoes suck the blood of human beings and other animals. Such insignificant creatures are unaware that their bites are painful to the human beings. However, first-class human beings, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, are developed in consciousness, and therefore they know how painful it is to be killed. A human being endowed with knowledge certainly commits sin if he kills or torments insignificant creatures who have no discrimination. The Supreme Lord punishes such a man by putting him into the hell known as Andhakupa, where he is attacked by all the birds and beasts, reptiles and mosquitoes, lice and worms, flies and any other creatures he has tormented during his life. They attack him from all sides, robbing him of the pleasure of sleep. Unable to rest, he constantly wanders about in the darkness. Thus in Andhakupa, his suffering is just like that of a creature in the lower species. So lower animals have a different responsibility than humans, and they are not punishable for their actions. Why? Because they don't have developed consciousness. A person is considered no better than a crow if after receiving some food he does not divide it amongst guests, old men and children, but simply eats it himself, or if he eats it without performing the five kinds of sacrifice. That means feeding it to, there's different kinds, I can't remember them, there's pancha, jan, something. Do you know them? One is birds. You have to give some food to, this is all in the cultural vanashrama system. You have to feed the living entities. After death, he is put into the most abominable hell known as Krimi Bhojan. In that hell is a lake of 10,000 yojanas, 800,000 miles wide and filled with worms. He becomes a worm in that lake and feeds on the other worms there who also feed on him. Unless he atones for his actions before his death, such a sinful man remains in the hellish lake of Krimi Bhojana for as many years as there are yojanas in the width of the lake. At the end of Prabhupada's purport to this verse, he says, if we do not perform jagya and distribute prasad to others, our lives are condemned. Only after performing jagya and distributing the prasad to all dependents, children, brahmanas, and old men, should one eat. However, one who cooks only for himself or his family is condemned. Along with everyone he feeds, after death he is put into the hell known as Krimi Bhojana. My dear king, a person who in the absence of an emergency robs a brahmana, or indeed anyone else, of his gems and gold is put into a hell known as Sandamsa. There his skin is torn and separated by red-hot iron balls and tongues. In this way his entire body is cut to pieces. Then there are various hells for sexual indulgences, improper illicit sexual indulgences, really nasty hells. And Prabhupada explains, the Krishna consciousness movement forbids illicit sex. From the description of these verses, we can understand what an extremely sinful act illicit sex is. Sometimes people disbelieve these descriptions of hell, but whether one believes or not, everything must be carried out by the law of nature, which no one can avoid. More hells are described. If in this life a man of the higher class, Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, is very fond of taking his pet dogs, mules or asses into the forest to hunt and kill animals unnecessarily, he is placed after death into the hell known as Pranarodha, where the assistants of Yamaraj make him their targets and pierce him with arrows. Prabhupada's purport. Men of the higher classes, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, should cultivate knowledge of Brahman, and they should also give the Sudras a chance to come to that platform. If instead they indulge in hunting, they are punished as described in this verse. Not only are they pierced with arrows by the agents of Yamaraj, but they are also put into the ocean of pus, urine and stool described in the previous verse. A person who in this life is proud of his eminent position and who heedlessly sacrifices animals simply for material prestige is put into the hell called Vishashan after death. There the assistants of Yamaraj kill him after giving him unlimited pain. So one should not forget, Prabhupada explains in his purport, that all one's opulences, whatever they are given to him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one should not become proud, but rather, on the other hand, one should properly use them in Krishna's service. A person who in this life bears false witness or lies while transacting business or giving charity is severely punished after death by the agents of Yamaraj. Such a sinful man is taken to the top of a mountain 800 miles high and thrown headfirst into the hell known as Avichimat. This hell has no shelter and is made of strong stones resembling the waves of water. There is no water there, however, and thus it is called Avichimat, waterless. Although the sinful man is repeatedly thrown from the mountain and his body broken into tiny pieces, he still does not die but continuously suffers chastisement. A low-born, abominable person who in this life becomes falsely proud, thinking, "I am great," and who thus fails to show proper respect to one more elevated than he by birth, austerity, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order, is like a dead man even in this lifetime, and after death he is thrown headfirst into the hell known as Charakardam. There he must suffer great tribulations at the hands of the agents of Yamaraj. In this life, some people give shelter to animals and birds that come to them for protection in the forest or village. And after making them believe that they will be protected, such people pierce them with lances or threads and play with them like toys, giving them great pain. After death, such people are brought by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell known as Sulaprota, where their bodies are pierced with sharp needle-like lances. They suffer from hunger and thirst, and sharp-beaked birds such as vultures and herons come at them from all sides to tear at their bodies. Tortured and suffering, they can then remember the sinful activities they committed in the past. A householder who receives guests or visitors with cruel glances as if to burn them to ashes is put into the hell called Paryavartan, where he is gazed at by hard-eyed vultures, herons, crows, and similar birds, which suddenly swoop down and pluck out his eyes with great force. This is a happy chapter, isn't it? Prabhupada's purport. According to Vedic etiquette, even an enemy who comes to the householder's home should be received in such a gentle way that he forgets that he has come to the home of an enemy. A guest who comes to one's home should be received very politely. If he is unwanted, the householder should not stare at him with blinking eyes. Unblinking eyes, possibly. Cruel glances. Or blinking eyes, it says here. For one who does so will be put into the hell known as Paryavartana after death. And there are many ferocious birds like vultures, crows, and cockneys. What's a cockney? Other than the folks from England, will suddenly come upon him and pluck out his eyes. One who in this world or in this life is very proud of his wealth always thinks, "I am so rich, who can equal me?" His vision is twisted, and he is always afraid that someone will take his wealth. Indeed, he even suspects his superiors. His face and heart dry up at the thought of losing his wealth, and therefore he always looks like a wretched fiend. He is not in any way able to contain actual happiness, and he does not know what it is to be free from anxiety. Because of the sinful things he does to earn money, augment his wealth and protect it, he is put into the hell known as Suchimukha, where the officials of Yamaraj punish him by stitching thread through his entire body like weavers manufacturing cloth. Prabhupada's purport explains the proper use of money. And he says, wherever there is money, it must be engaged in the service of Lord Narayan. Everyone should use his money to spread the great transcendental movement of Krishna consciousness. If one does not spend money for this purpose, but accumulates more than necessary, he'll certainly become proud of the money he illegally possesses. And he will be punished, puffed up, proud, and punished. So that ends the descriptions of these specific hells. Then in 37, my dear King Parikit, in the province of Yamaraj, there are hundreds and thousands of hellish planets. The impious people I have mentioned, and also those I have not mentioned, must all enter these various planets according to the degree of their impiety. Those who are pious, however, enter other planetary systems, namely the planets of the demigods. Nevertheless, both the pious and impious are again brought to earth after the results of their pious or impious activities are exhausted. So earth planet is called Karma Bhumi. So one performs activities on earth, and then those activities bring him results. Depending upon the type of activities he performs, he goes up and enjoys or down and suffers. So he, in the other places, one is working off one's karma. On earth, one attains karma. So human life is especially meant to do the right thing, to act properly. Prabhupada explains in the purport what the ultimate purpose of human life is, isn't to go up and enjoy and then have to come back and work hard, even though that's what the basic philosophy of the Karma Mamangsakas is, keep on performing pious activities, so much pious activities that one will stay always in the heavenly places practically forever and always enjoy. But it doesn't work like that. One must always come down at some point, and then there is always the danger of impiety and therefore suffering. So the purpose of human life is not to go up and enjoy and to avoid suffering. Prabhupada explains, the complete purpose of this material world will be fulfilled when we resume our spiritual identity and go back home, back to Godhead. The very simple method for doing this is prescribed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarvadhamam Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. One should be neither pious nor impious. One should be a devotee and surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. The surrendering process is also very easy. Even a child can perform it. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. One must always simply think of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One should become Krishna's devotee, worship him, and offer obeisances to him. Thus one should engage all the activities of his life in the service of Lord Krishna. In the beginning, this is text 38, in the beginning, the second and third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I have already described how one can progress on the path of liberation. In the Puranas, the vast universal existence, which is like an egg divided into 14 parts, is described. This vast form is considered the external body of the Lord, created by his energy and qualities. It is generally called the Virata-rupa. If one reads the description of this external form of the Lord with great faith, or if one hears about it or explains it to others to propagate Bhagavad Dharma or Krishna consciousness, his faith and devotion and spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, will gradually increase. Although developing this consciousness is very difficult, by this process one can purify himself and gradually come to an awareness of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So the Virata Rupa is the form of the Lord that's by looking at the material world, one can understand the material world in relationship to the form of Krishna. That's one aspect of the Virata Rupa. Because actually the entire material existence is situated as the Lord's externally manifested almost material form. Although Krishna has no material form, this is like a material form of Krishna. So if one can, when one sees matter, one sees the material world, one can see it in relationship to Krishna, that will elevate him in Krishna consciousness. Because this is the key, to see everything in relationship with Krishna, so that we're always seeing Krishna and always thinking of Krishna. And then thinking of Krishna is what ultimately elevates us. So one who is interested in liberation, who accepts the path of liberation and is not attracted to the path of conditioned life, is called a yati, a renunciate, or a devotee. Such a person should first control his mind by thinking of the Virata Rupa. So this is specifically explained in the beginning of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, and the Vishwarupa is explained in three places in the third canto as well. So renouncing everything, one should wander just seeing everything in the world in relationship with Krishna. Such a person should first control his mind by thinking of the Virata Rupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, and then gradually think of the spiritual form of Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha. After hearing of both forms, so seeing the material world in relationship with Krishna, because Sukadeva Goswami has just spent so much time describing the whole material world. So he's saying we should see this in relationship to Krishna, from the highest planet to the lowest planet. The lower planets are considered the soles of the feet of the Lord. The higher planets are considered the head of the Lord. This has all been explained in the second canto. So one should understand that this is an external form of Krishna, and thereby hearing about Krishna, one should think about Krishna in his spiritual form. Thus one's mind is fixed in samadhi, fully focused on Krishna. By devotional service, one can then realize the spiritual form of the Lord, which is the destination of devotees. Thus his life becomes successful. So we should see everything in the material world in relationship with Krishna, gradually become purified, and then engage in devotional service and go back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada's purport. It is said, Mahat Sevam Dwararahuram Vimukte, if one wants to progress on the path of liberation, he should associate with Mahatmas, or liberated devotees. Because in such association, there is a full chance for hearing, describing, and chanting about the name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of which are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. On the path of bondage, one eternally undergoes the repetition of birth and death. One who desires liberation from such bondage should join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and thus take advantage of the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from devotees and also explain it to propagate Krishna consciousness. And the final verse in the chapter, text 40, and also the final verse in the fifth canto. My dear King, I have now described for you this planet Earth, other planetary systems and their lands, varshas, rivers and mountains. I have also described the sky, the oceans, the lower planetary systems, the directions, the hellish planetary systems and the stars. These constitute the Virata Rupa, the gigantic material form of the Lord on which all living entities repose. Thus I have explained the wonderful expanse of the eternal body of the Lord. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 26th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Hellish Planets, completed in the Honolulu Temple of the Panchatattva, June 5th, 1975. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So after Maharaj Prickett hears this about all the hells and all the suffering he becomes very disturbed and full of compassion. And he asks Sukadeva Goswami how to become free from the reactions to the sinful activities that one performs. How can one save himself, and how can one save others from having to suffer these hellish reactions? Such suffering, such misery. How could one save oneself and save others from such suffering? So that will be the beginning of the sixth canto. Okay, we'll stop here.